Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. And welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good, and you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be on the air here.
I know. We were just talking about what a strange day this has been in many ways, and computers are not exempt from that sort of thing.
Yes.
But
and
it works.
You know, I have to come up with a different saying than Mercury is in retrograde. Because
yes. That's
the only astrology I know, so maybe you can give me a new line.
Well, you kind of exhausted my expertise as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
And, of course, we never know. We just say it all the time. So, as far as we know, it's retrograde perpetually.
As far as I can tell, yes. Yes. Hey, we have a caller, Sherry.
Wonderful.
Welcome, Dave from Dallas. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Dave.
You.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, and you?
I'm very good. I'm very glad to be talking with you.
Well, what's going on?
Well, I have a question. I'm having a little trouble with the concept of struggle. You know, you have talked about how we don't have to struggle, really. We can follow what we love. You know, if you love nature and appreciate trees and an environmentalist, just go out there and plant trees, you know, that kind of thing. And I understand it when it comes to individual choices like that. But when it comes to social change, if you want some kind of social change, I think that involves some kind of struggle, as history tells us. If you want to change structures of oppression, the ones at the top of the hierarchy having privileges don't give up their power, their privileges, voluntarily. So if you want social change, you will have to struggle.
Okay. Now, let me ask you about this.
Yeah.
How long do you think this has been going on, this kind of social struggle?
The social struggle? Forever.
Okay. And how successful has it been?
Well, it has been successful in many instances.
Uh-huh.
Does
that mean that the people at the top no longer have the kinds of privileges that some people feel they shouldn't have, or that they're any more willing to give it up voluntarily?
Oh, no. It's just the same old story in that sense.
Yeah. So here's the deal about that. You know, the Buddha never said you shouldn't struggle. What he said was, it's possible to end suffering. So, in my personal view of what the Buddha was teaching, which is very different from making a statement about what the Buddha was teaching, there are no shoulds about anything. We are perfectly free to pursue anything that we want to pursue in life. What he pointed out is, if we do certain things, if we don't do certain things, the odds are very good that we're going to suffer. And one of the things that he pointed out is that when we want something that is different from what is, when we cling to ideas about how things should be, we are bound to suffer.
All right. I understand that.
Yeah. So if you want to work in the world to effect some sort of change,
yes,
you're free to do that.
Right.
If you believe that you're right, if you dislike other people, if you think that things things that are wrong that should be different, and you take that personally and you invest in that and become attached to that, the odds are good you're going to suffer.
So, well, let's take an example then. What is in front of us? The environment is being destroyed.
Always has been.
Always have been. You see?
Right?
But, I mean, right now it's at a rate that I don't think has been like that before. I mean, there are less forests, whole species becoming extinct. I mean, it's well documented. I'm not making this up.
Right. My point is, however, that people have been destroying the environment for as long as there have been people.
Okay, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But now the machinery for destruction is much bigger than that, and at the rate that we're going, we're going to maybe, become extinct ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all this is, like I said, well documented. And if you want to, let's say you feel compassion for the animals that are dying, you see that, that you want to do something. You know, I want to say that that's wrong, and I think that I believe that killing, animals like that is wrong. But if you want to do something, however you want to take it, and you feel compassion moved to do something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can I stop you right there?
I'm sorry?
Can I stop you right there and ask you something?
Well, can I finish what I was going to say?
Sure.
So, if you want to do something, you have to take a path of suffering then.
Why? That's what I was going to ask you. Why is it a requirement if you want to do something to help someone else? Why must that be a struggle, or why must that involve suffering?
Well, that's what I want to find out, Sherry. Is there a way not to do it without suffering?
Sure.
Yes?
Of course, the Buddha did it without suffering.
Yeah,
it's the whole point of what he taught.
Well, how would you save, species that are being killed at a rapid rate without the only things that come to my mind is get involved with Greenpeace,
Okay.
Get in the way of ships that are killing whales, that kind of thing.
Can I ask you something else about this? Have you ever considered that if you kill a cow, as far as that cow is concerned, you've ended the species. So as human beings, we get all worked up that a species is going to go extinct. Now, we don't have a problem with all of them being killed right up until the point that they are no longer going to be available to us. So we go get animals and we put them in zoos. And we feel good because we can create an environment in which a few of them can breed so that we can look at them. But what does that actually do for them? Would you feel good as a human being if all other human beings were killed except for, 20 or so, and you were able to exist somewhere in some zoo-like environment and continue to procreate so that the human species wouldn't die out completely?
I'm afraid I don't understand the question. I mean, it's kind of scenario that I don't...
Well,
what are you trying to tell me?
What I'm pointing at is that, generally speaking, I'll just cut to the chase, okay?
Yes.
Our desire to save the environment, I'm making little quote marks in the air, okay?
Right.
To save the environment is a little self-serving. Because we're participating in the destruction, and I would say the wanton destruction of life, all day long, every day. All day long, every day. And then we get to a certain point where we want to say, yeah, but these people should stop doing that thing that is going to result in this particular destruction of life that's really upsetting to me.
What's the alternative here?
Well, the alternative is to follow that projected suffering. Okay, because as I'm saying, if we destroy all of the spotted red toads on the earth, those spotted red toads do not care beyond their own destruction, which is the same for us. So when we project out suffering and believe that there's something out there that is suffering, to me, we add a layer of suffering that's unnecessary. So when we bring those projections back and we own those projections, so it's really painful to me to see the destruction that goes on this planet.
Right, but once I see that,
okay,
maybe I'm moved to do something.
Well, okay, stay with me for just a second,
yeah.
Okay? So one of the first places that I might look is to who is actually suffering. Okay, now, it doesn't take very long for me to conclude it's not the spotted red frogs, okay?
Right.
Me, I'm the one who's suffering. The suffering that exists is inside of me. So now it's possible for me to begin to work with that person inside of me who suffers over this. Okay? So I can begin to help that person end their suffering.
I mean yourself. Help yourself.
Inside me.
Right.
That's right. Inside me.
Okay.
Now, as that process goes on, without sliding into self-hatred, which it's very easy to do because conditioning likes us to slide into self-hatred and suffering whenever possible, okay? I can begin to look at all of the ways that I participate in the very destruction that when it's projected out there with those poor suffering things and those bad people who are doing things to those poor suffering things, okay, I bring it all back, and I look at how I am the one that is the cause of all of this destruction in the world.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
Now, at that point, of course, a person can become, as I say, filled with self-hatred and paralyzed. Okay, so I can't get in my car and drive anymore because the bugs keep hitting the windshield, and I can't, and I'm running over things, and I can't, I can't dig holes in my backyard to plant trees because I'm killing all these worms and all this stuff. Okay, and so then we want to look at something that is along the lines of being alive as anything, not just a human being, but we're human beings, so we'll look at it from our perspective. Being alive, existing as a human being, is a very destructive process.
Okay, I can agree with that.
You can?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And so, then we're left in a place of having to make peace with that.
Okay.
Because that's the way it is.
Okay.
In order for me to eat, something else has to die. In order for that, whatever that is, to eat, and
yes,
since I'm a vegetarian, you know, we're primarily talking about vegetables.
Right.
But still, for them to live, other things have to change form.
Yes.
Okay? So the whole life process is one of giving up one's life for life.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you, I lost you.
So that's what we're doing all the time.
Okay. But I see what you're saying, but I was just using the environment as one example. But maybe I could be clearer with, let's say, civil rights. Rights, you know, for the black people. Martin Luther King didn't sit down in a room and just did all this, because
okay.
by the time he cleared all that up, all the black people, I don't know, he wouldn't have.
But now, David, we've slipped in our logic here. The point is it necessary to suffer? Is it necessary to struggle? And you and I cannot sit here and know what Dr. King was experiencing.
Well,
we can
hear his words, and he talks about struggle.
Okay. And we, I hope, cannot presume to know what he meant by that. So is it something that one suffers over? Or is it something that one chooses to do, is moved to do, loves to do, would not miss the opportunity to do? That's a very different struggle, even though the word struggle might be applied, because it might take from early morning until late at night for years of one's life to accomplish something.
Right, and it will take confrontation, and would take took him jail and actually his life. At the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
to me, it's important that we stay focused on the point, rather than going off into a hypothetical conversation about Dr. Martin Luther King.
That's, well, to me, it served to make the point, because I thought we were just going out with the example I gave you first. We were going out maybe into very interesting and juicy conversation, but my point wasn't there. My point is how, you know, like people like Martin Luther King and Gandhi, maybe they did their they walked their path maybe without suffering and in a different kind of struggle. You know, that's what I'm trying to find out. Is there an alternative? And I look at those two people, because I really respect them, and I think maybe they were onto something. Maybe there wasn't a quality of suffering in their path, even though they, you know, they were gassed and beaten and, you know, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what you're saying? Is that what you were trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is that I project that both of those people, also spiritual heroes of mine, and we can toss Mother Teresa into the mix as well, that what those people were doing was their own spiritual work. Gandhi called it experiments in truth. And he was always, as far as we can tell, looking to see what would happen with this. And again, as from my projections onto what he was saying, he was always looking at how to be closer to God. So how could he take a step in this direction, find the place that's most compassionate for all, push nothing outside the circle of acceptance, embrace it all into love, take another step. And the content was never more important than the process.
Okay. I guess there are some spiritual paths that seem harder than others.
Oh, of course it's hard. Absolutely it's hard. It it requires your whole life. It's also, at least in my experience, the happiest, most joyful, wonderful life a human being can live. So going beyond the ego, not making choices for egocentricity moment by moment by moment, requires great effort and willingness. It's also a joyful way to live.
Yeah, I think...
Okay, I think you're going to have to look at this. You want some homework?
All right.
Okay, I would encourage you to find something that you want to affect a change in.
Uh-huh.
And then begin to do that, seeing if it's possible to do it from center rather than from ideas about how things should be. Can it be done from a place of compassion for all rather than something wrong and not enough?
Well, that's big homework.
That's big homework. That's right. But what it does is take us out of our head, you know, in this idea, noodling it around, and into the trenches. And the trenches, that's where it all happens.
Okay. I don't know if there are other callers, I guess. That's...
Yes.
Okay.
Let me know what happens.
Respect for them. I'll take the homework, and I'll save my question for next time.
Then we get to talk again.
Right. And the last homework, I just want to tell you, I appreciate it, and I took it to heart. It was exploring how power... You're giving me the same homework all the time, Cherry.
Don't you love it when it happens that way?
Right. It's how power, you know, how I experience power when I'm in center, and how I experience it when I'm trying to fix something and I think something's wrong, and when I'm out of center.
Uh-huh.
So it's the same homework. But
it's the same homework. And it's kind of comforting, isn't it? We keep being us. We keep being who we are. The karma stays the same, and the work that we need to do remains the same.
Okay. More homework, and I'll call you back.
Very good.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Dave. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you in just a minute. Coming up next on Open Air in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness, responding to your email questions, and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Joel from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
What's going on?
Hi, Sherry. I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about the meaning of the precept not to be angry. Just because I'm trying, and how that you kind of incorporate that into daily practice, because that's what I seem to be having some issues with.
What have you been running into?
Well, I'm faced with a situation now where I'm feeling angry, and then of course, ego pops in and tells me that I'm not supposed to be angry, which kind of makes me more angry, you know. And then I can step back and see that that's not going anywhere.
Right, right. And so what happens is that something happens. And you have a big response to it, yeah, a lot of energy, a lot of adrenaline in the body,
mm-hmm.
And there's a story that goes with it.
Right.
Yeah, and the story is somebody done me wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So something happened, and I don't like it, and it shouldn't be this way, and blah, 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 it's your fault, and da, 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 da. Okay, so it's like a great big storm goes through the system.
Yes.
Yeah. And so then does it pass?
Yes, it does pass.
Okay, are you the kind of person who blows up and blah, and then it's all over, or are you the slow simmer, you're going to pay for this type?
I get a little bit of both, but I feel it very strongly at times.
Uh-huh.
Just that very tense, almost explosion, which I try to, observe what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And so what would happen if you exploded?
Oh, I don't know. I don't usually get that. In the name of spirituality, I tend to, calm myself down. Like, I'm not being spiritual, being angry.
Mm-hmm.
So I end up kind of stuffing it, which...
Yes, which is so spiritual, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so spiritual.
And then down the road a little bit, you can no longer control it, and boom, it all comes out, and then you get an even worse beating.
Yes.
Yeah. And so do you see a pattern with it? Are there specific circumstances or people or, situations that kind of get you to this place of...
I'll certainly have to look at that and see if there... I mean, I'm sure there is a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure what the triggers are.
Oh, which would be really important to know, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, a couple of things about it. One, that precept really tends to, when people encounter it, and most people have anger as an issue,
mm-hmm.
one degree or another, it really causes them to look at that, which is important. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a huge value in the precept right there. It just gets people to say, okay, well, maybe just going unconscious and acting out is not the way to success and freedom. So that's one aspect of it. The Buddha supposedly used an image for anger of reaching into a fire and picking up a burning ember to throw it at someone.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, in that image, what are the chances that we're going to do any damage to anybody else? Not good, right?
Yes, not
good. The damage that we do to ourselves is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, it's a really painful image to reach in a fire and pick up something that's burning. So it's an indication that the encouragement not to be angry is because of the toll that it takes on us. It's a very damaging emotion. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece of it. Another piece of it is that anger is something that's called a secondary emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a reaction to a deeper, more original emotion that is less acceptable. So that's usually something like fear. Fear is often the one. Hurt, disappointment,
mm-hmm.
okay? More vulnerable kinds of emotions. And anger, we learn to use anger as a way to cover up that vulnerability. So that's another way of doing harm to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most significant part of the precept to me is that it says not to be angry. It actually doesn't say not to get angry.
Yeah.
Notice that?
Yeah, which, I do. I see that.
Yeah, conditioning really wants us not to notice that. So one of the things, because I'm historically been something of an anger expert. I have
mm-hmm.
a really quick temper. I'm anger doesn't upset me. I don't mind getting angry. I scream and yell easily, and that's one of the things that I've always encouraged people to do. So you find yourself now, it's important to go through all the stages, right? So finding out what sort of triggers you, what sets you off, is it just random or is it Do you notice that pressure builds, 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 and then, boom, you blow up at something? Is it just a way of activating self-hatred? You know, you're doing really well in your life, and then that'll kick you into a bout of self-punishment and judgment and self-hatred. So, you know, what are the circumstances? We don't ever want to miss an opportunity to find that out. And then begin to play with the energy. So if you're in a situation, maybe you're, I don't know where you are, you're at work, and something happens and up comes all of that energy. Can you just walk outside somewhere and scream at the top of your lungs? You know, or stand and jump up and down for about a minute and a half? You know, something that moves the energy and dissipates it.
Mm-hmm.
Because with karma, one of the great difficulties is that we close down around sensations and emotions. We lock them in place, and then they feel overwhelming to us.
Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah. One of the big ones for me was running, because that moves the energy. It gets it, you know, gets it flowing through the body. So, you know, I'd get all this going, usually because I've been doing something that is stressful in a sedentary environment. You know, think of our culture. You know, so many people spend extraordinary amounts of time indoors, often sitting, drinking coffee, doing stressful stuff. Okay? And there's that system. You know, it's just like putting a lid on a pressure cooker, cranking it down and turning up the heat. And pretty soon there's going to be an explosion of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So if you recognize that you're doing that to yourself in your life, and you give yourself ways of dissipating that energy that are harmless, then you take good care of your body. It's good for you emotionally. It's just good for you in every way.
I think that's what I have to, ways to express it. I think anger scares me, or scares part of me, another aspect of me.
Yeah, yes, which, again, puts you in that pressure cooker position, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
so
does.
Somebody is feeling whatever this is, and somebody else is saying, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's just it's like being put in a vise, and it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And then you add the equally or even more stressful aspect of, this is wrong, you shouldn't be this way, you know, it's not spiritual. God is going to get you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I whip myself even more into anger.
Yeah,
but do you think it's beneficial, and perhaps this is just subjective, is it all? If it is all projection, even talking with the other person, like, you know, it's saying, oh, you know, you made me angry, or this made me angry, because it really has nothing to do with them.
That's correct. And in my experience, and I'm projecting that what you want is to be free rather than to be right. Yeah?
Yeah.
So if that's true, if you really want to be free, then bringing somebody else into the conversation just confuses things.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you take responsibility for all of it, you know, at the monastery we have that little thing, if I am suffering, it's because I am choosing something over ending suffering.
Yeah.
And so there it is. So whether, even if what the person is doing, you know, you could get everybody in the world to agree, that was a mean, rotten, nasty thing to do. So what? It's my reaction to it that I'm suffering over.
And that's what becomes fascinating, because what I am mad at is more of an organization, if you will, and I know that they're not mean or nasty, and what happened was not personal.
Right.
But it was so hard not to take it personally.
Yep. Yep. There you are. And so that's really good work. Now you have a sense of who's struggling so much over this. You can take care of him directly. Because in that, the way we're trained to do it, you're supposed to abandon him to his misery while you go riding off on your white charger to kill the dragon. Well, forget the dragon. You know, take care of the guy who's bleeding.
I'm going to try doing that. That's certainly, I certainly do abandon myself first.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying this because you're a bad person if you do it the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just that this is the way to take care of what's really going on. If you go into those other old karmic patterns, okay.
Mm-hmm.
We all do. As soon as you come to, instead of letting the voice beat you up for having done it wrong, you just come back to, okay, well, who's suffering here?
Okay.
Yeah?
I will do that. Thank you very much for your time, Sherry.
You're very welcome. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for joining us, Joel. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Xian Ma from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, this is really different. I actually called in because I had a sense I wanted to call and check in, but I actually don't have an agenda.
Uh-huh.
So, I've been watching the process, the somebody who wanted to, this is a common part, right, just wants to figure out what to do, and just when I've been sitting here, because I've been on the phone for a while, and just not coming back to breath and not going there. So I actually don't know what's going to come out.
Uh-huh.
So I guess, you know, this is following up from the guidance from last week, which, you know, set all kinds of things off. And it's still, I mean, it seems as I've been watching this part that really has gotten really clear, this part who just so wants to feel special. And because I'm actually back here with my parents for, you know, the first quarter of 2 weeks or whatever. And knowing that part, you know, I'm finally seeing, I guess I wasn't aware so much of that part, and seeing how that part kind of manifests with all different kinds of content and the way she wants to feel special, therefore different. I mean, you could say better than, you could say, so, you know, it comes out in practice, it comes out in relationships.
Mm-hmm. Actually, when we're following that need to be special, better than is best, but worse than will also serve.
I think that I did a lot of worse than growing up and things, and in some way, maybe more recently, I kind of switched to the better than. I mean, that's I don't know who's talking, Terry. That's just the sense of things in just stepping back to look.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it's been like some ways working with that, because I can see certain, I mean, for the first time maybe, the certain thought patterns and certain emotions or certain ways of certain content or whatever, and then it's like, oh, she's here.
Uh-huh. That person.
Yeah, that person, she's here. And then just coming back to just, like, being with her.
Yeah, or
yeah,
we can simply come back to the present.
Yes.
You know, being with is a wonderful step. It's not a requirement that it be active.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I, you know, you're my subpersonality, and you know, you've had a hard time, and so I'm living from center now, and so when you come around, you know, I want to take care of you and listen to you and talk with you and comfort you and all of those kinds of things. Now, at a certain point, we need to drop that, because that taking care of is just the other side of the coin from neglecting.
Well, it still creates an other, sort of, right?
Correct.
Is that what you're
Correct.
Talking about?
Yes. So it's as if, you know, there are a whole bunch of it, you know, there are 12 or 15 of us, And we're in a room, and we're getting to know one another. And so we talk, and we tell stories, and we learn things about one another. But what we're really moving toward is just being able to be there together.
Hmm.
And a huge piece of that is getting to the place of realizing we're all fine.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to have opinions about one another, judge one another, criticize one another, improve one another, take care of one another. We're all fine. So we can all just sit here and breathe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's the other thing that's kind of, just for watching for that party who's trying to figure things out and coming to the breath, and there's just this sense, I mean, I've been watching, you know, I think identification or things come up. There's been, like, you know, emotions or stuff that's emotions coming up and just coming back to sensations and watching them, or just coming back to sensations and dropping the story or whatever the talk is around them.
Yeah.
Yeah, or this thing about not, I mean, right now I just don't think, I mean, I know it's kind of a paradox, so to say I don't know anything is like,
it's knowing
of not knowing, so it's not 100%.
Yeah, I know that I don't know anything.
Yeah, or something, but there's just this sense of just, you know, in some ways in the, I don't know, maybe it's the dropping of trying to figure it out, is there's like a whole shoulder shrug, and it's like a, you know, for lack of a better thing, I don't know.
Yes, so it's the my two favorite expressions over the last 10 years. You get up in the morning, and you say, whatever. And at night, when you right before you go to sleep, you say, oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is.
Yeah.
Perfect little bookends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of, in some ways, that's kind of what, at sometimes anyway, that's kind of what it feels like going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And eventually, we have to dropping it.
Yeah. Yeah, because that still makes an I who's dropping it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I'm trying to figure out whether I'm in a place of knowing something or not knowing anything. So, you know, it's the wonderful thing about awareness practice. We just keep stepping back. We just keep stepping back. And as long as I'm someone who's stepping back, I'm not finished stepping back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
Moment by moment by moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just, I mean, and just also with, so, and the same thing, kind of thing with that, with, because I was also listening, of course, to what the other callers were saying about this thing, you know, with my folks and kind of the way they interact, or that, you know, they've got their health issues or whatever, and that place of not going to there's something wrong or I'm right or something, but just kind of being with them and in some ways, you know, trying to say, make food that my dad will eat because he tends not to eat these days or something, you know, but without going into, there's something wrong or it has to be any different than it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the best Zen phrase of all time. Is that so?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because what conditioning wants to do is make it all mean something and go into a story about it, and then I have to be someone in relation to that, and what should I do, and that's not the right thing, but I should this. And the fact of the matter is, there he is. He's eating this. He's not eating it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. And life becomes incredibly simple. And, I dare say, pleasant.
Well, so then, the other aspect of some of this is there's just kind of, dimes anyway, this experience of kind of like the shrug or whatever, of space, but it almost feels like there's nothing there. I can't explain that.
Well, if there's nothing there, then there's nothing there.
Yeah, I guess.
See, there's that endless tendency to turn it into a relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or to make it mean something, or to try and figure it out.
to make it into a relationship, something I can relate to. And what we're moving toward is...
It just is.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And even to say, it just is.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah.
It is something. Yeah. So it's that, you know, I sit and I look out at the mountain and there's just that irrepressible urge to say, isn't that beautiful? You know, I just can't let that mountain alone. And it's fine. It's not a problem. The only time it's a problem is when we have to take it personally and make it mean something, and then we have to do something about it. And
mm-hmm. So they're not, yeah. So, yeah, the experience, is that what you're saying? So taking whatever the experience is and making it personal and making it have a meaning and making it...
Sure.
Yeah.
And we could idealize just looking at the mountain and not a thought in your head. But what's the problem with saying, isn't that beautiful? You see? So,
yeah.
So there's a tendency to idealize something. And then,
anything, yeah, yeah.
Is this the right thing? Is that the right thing? Well, it just is what is.
Yeah, it is what is in a kind of a soft way, not a hard way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's no... It's just something we say. It's something we say because we're in a conversation. If we weren't in a conversation, we wouldn't have to say it just is what is, because it just is what is. There wouldn't be anything that needed, you know, there wouldn't be any need to identify that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Keep having fun.
A lot.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jian Ma. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we've been given an extra couple of minutes tonight.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give out the phone number again. If you'd like to join our conversation today, we still have time. Phone lines are open, and you can reach us toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Again, that's 866-613-1612. Phone lines are open. And if you're further away, and we've been getting some calls from further away, if you're overseas, you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. Sherry, while we're waiting for those phone lines to start ringing, I have a short email question here.
All right.
And it's actually a continuation of one that we were looking at earlier, and I had to do some research for it. Hi, Sherry. I was reading your book, Be the Person You Want to Find, and I got to the part about egocentricity and passive awareness and became unclear about the definitions of both. Can you please give me some clarification about both so that I will understand each meaning and examples? Thank you from a listener. And so you directed me, Sherry, to go look in the book and see what it says.
You know, I do want to say that's funny, because would you give a definition so that I will understand?
Uh-huh. You know,
the only answer to that really, truly is no. You know, the only real kindness that we can offer under those circumstances is no, I won't, actually. Because to perpetuate, to support and encourage the delusion that somebody is going to give an explanation that will help someone understand something. Yikes. However, what we do is point in directions, encouraging people that all we're doing is pointing in a direction. You know, people are always saying to me, as you know, well, you said blah, 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 blah. And, you know, about 99% of the time, I think, no, I didn't, because I wouldn't have said that. So anyway. Somebody says something, we make it mean something, we believe it, we think we understand it, then we operate out of that, and, oh, dear, it's so all around the mulberry bush. But anyway.
Yes.
What'd you find? Yes.
What I found was passive awareness, same thing as conscious compassionate awareness.
Mm.
When we sit in meditation, we practice passive awareness.
Mm. Isn't that good? We do, don't we?
Yes.
Practicing not having, this is what we were just talking about with Xian Ma, right? Practicing
yes.
not having to be someone who is aware, simply observing, experiencing, being really, really close to, as it happens, awareness.
Uh-huh.
So there's awareness, I'm sitting, and awareness is aware.
Uh-huh.
And there is an awareness of awareness being aware. Now, what we're conditioned to do and where the illusion happens and all the suffering really heats up is that I take ownership of that whole process. I take it personally. I believe there's a me separate from that experience who is having that experience. And then I become somebody who has to do something about that me. Do you get a sense of it?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's yes. just, it's what the person was looking at when they coined the term slippery slope.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what we're learning to do is simply sit there aware of awareness.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other part of it?
The other part was definitions of both. So egocentricity was the other term.
Yeah, egocentricity. I, me, my. The illusion of this as a separate self, a self separate from everything else. Ego identity. I was just recording When You're Falling Dive. And there's this little page in the beginning of it that lists all of the terms that I use interchangeably for that illusion of a separate self.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's what's struggling so hard to keep us in the past or in the future, anywhere but in the present, where awareness is simply aware of awareness. So that's the conversation, that's something wrong, there's not enough. That's
wow.
awareness practice right there.
Wow. I could just be here being aware.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that's confusing for us is that conditioned mind, which is a synonym for egocentric karmic conditioning, conditioned mind would have us believe that if we were simply to live in awareness of awareness, nothing would ever happen. But in fact, everything happens in awareness. And the way we can know that is that we are in awareness. So the illusion of being separate from that, of being an I who's outside of life, it's just an illusion. It's fiction. It's not true. It's not real. We imagine it, and then we think it's real. Once we get a glimpse of that, then we can see how obvious it is. So there are how many people on the planet now?
Many. 6 billion plus.
Huh?
6 billion plus, I think.
6 billion plus, yeah. All with a different view of reality. All seeing a different world, living in a different life. So when we step back a little half step, we think, huh, now that's all made up. Everybody's living in their own movie. Nobody else sees your movie. You can tell people about your movie, but you can't get them to see it. No matter how
yes.
hard you try.
Yes.
Yeah. And what we can do is wake up to the fact that we're watching a movie. And
yes.
and then that's back to that. There's no problem with watching a movie. It's okay. It's just really important to know that you're watching a movie. it's when she and Ma was talking about the part who wants to be special. Oh, there's that part who wants to be special. Now, when we know that, when we know, oh, there's a character in the movie. You know, the character, that character just walked onto the set. That's great. That's not a problem. We don't have to get rid of her. But if we think that the movie is true and real, and everybody else should be able to see the movie, and that they're just being difficult or stupid or hateful or mean or something because they will not acknowledge the reality of our movie, then we're in trouble.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know that experience.
Yeah, and the movie is what we call karma.
Yes.
Yeah, karma is the... It's the set, it's the decorations, it's the script, it's the director, it's the actors, it's the producer. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that was a good question.
It was a good question.
One.
Thank you for that, Sherry.
Yeah.
And we have one final caller.
Very good.
I'd like to welcome Rebecca from Austin, Texas. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
How's it going?
Very well. How are things in Austin, Texas?
Oh, just peachy.
Just peachy keen.
Yeah, going right along.
Very good.
So why, I missed the first part of the show. Why is it after the time, the hour, and we're still going?
Well, there were some technical difficulties.
Oh, so I don't have to, like, talk real fast and...
Well, actually, we're getting close.
Oh, so I do have to
talk real fast time, but we're not there yet.
Okay, well, I can wind it down quickly. But so I love listening to this talk about the awareness of awareness and the whole movie metaphor. But and so my current plot that I seem to be obsessed on is, again, still, I should say, this whole notion of awareness in politics or public life. And what I'm looking at, because that seems to be just my scene right now, is how it really all of politics just kind of boils down to just participation and just doing the next thing in whatever realm we find ourselves.
Yeah, you mean participating in life, in society,
mm-hmm.
with other critters is politics.
Yeah, in its broadest form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then what seems to happen is these parameters get put up. You know, these institutions get built and these, you know, kind of definitions get made up about, you know, who's going to do what and whose role is this and whose party is that and what's right. And so the whole movie gets constructed and reconstructed every so often.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting, isn't it, that you could take that little, what you just laid out,
mm-hmm.
and we could plug in, we could plug in Europe during World War II. We could mm-hmm. pick any point in the history of any country on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Middle East now. It's, it's the wherever human beings have been,
uh-huh.
human beings have done that process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had ideas about the way it should be, what's right and what's wrong, and then fought, struggled, and suffered over it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the other way that I'm seeing, or the way that I guess I've been practicing engaging is from, you know, first of all, from this nonpartisan place, I have firmly embraced nonpartisanship personally,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of looking at, okay, if I want to play in this game of life and of engaging in, you know, whatever level of politics, it's very rewarding actually, and very fun when you don't have to make somebody wrong all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can, you know, I look at talking to a lot of different people the same way as like talking to subpersonalities. Mm-hmm. And as I'm an organizer, and so I talk to lots of people all the time and hear different stories. And I just project all the time. It's like all these people are just little parts of me, you know, really.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just my projection
mm-hmm.
of what I'm hearing. And then we can all practice acting together from that place that nobody's got to be wrong, but how can we do what's best for all, or at least best for most, given this certain set of circumstances?
So I mentioned earlier that I'm recording When You're Falling Dive,
uh-huh.
and I was talking with a fellow, delightful fellow named Bill McGeever from the Garrison Institute in New York.
Uh-huh.
And what we want to put together is something that you and I have actually talked about in the past
uh-huh.
on social involvement and spirituality.
Yes.
And so I'm going to send him the first about 38 pages of When You're Falling Dive, because that's exactly what it's about. I had forgotten what that book was about, actually, until I was recording it. But what I talk about in there is you and I are the heads of two nations in conflict. And
we are the what?
We're the leaders.
Okay.
You're the president of your country, and I'm the president of mine.
Uh-huh.
And our countries are in conflict. They want to fight. And that's our problem.
Uh-huh.
So in your country, there are people who want to fight and people who want peace. And in my country, there are people who want to fight and people who want peace.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are working together to find peace.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we have these people in our society who don't want peace, that's our problem,
yeah.
our problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how are we going to get together to solve our problem? Not how are you going to do something with your people to make them be the way they should be so that they'll be acceptable to me, so that I'll be willing to do whatever with my people, so that...
Yeah, and not want to kill
them. Does it sound at all like the Middle East?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how this practice, I mean, just using the tools of projection and understanding subpersonalities, and how that really facilitates this whole process, because
yes.
without it, I just don't see any other way.
No.
I just don't see any other way out of the dualism.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't either. And you know what? I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
Which is why I always go to that place of wherever you look at human history, as far back as we can go, as far, you know, with all of the different cultures that we know about, the same thing has gone on.
Yeah.
We are not going to solve these problems inside the same thinking that created them.
Yeah.
We're
and that
not.
You know, that's why all the energy for me has gone out of, you know, winning this political battle or winning this particular issue, or when it's like, you know, the ephemeralness of life just kind of smacks you in the face sometimes. And it's like, well, what? So what? You know?
Oh, yeah. Because even in our country, you just go back through history. Okay, this group wins. Then right before that, that group won.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before that, that group won. And it's just been a
seesaw
back and forth.
Forever.
The pendulum goes this way, then this way, then this way, then this way. And all the stuff stays the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so this is, you know, and this is just very, very interesting and kind of an obsession for me, I've noticed. But it's so fascinating just to kind of think about how can this practice be talked about, and how can it be taught in such a way that people, I don't know, that we all can practice it more readily and more together, I guess.
And here's my how can we teach it so in such a way that people want to do it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not nearly as juicy as the other way.
No kidding. I remember you saying something like this. I don't know that it was this, but it was something like, you can't give this stuff away. You could take out a full-page ad that says, joyful, fun life, and nobody would bite.
Yeah. All right, but there's no reason for us to give up.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
Oh. This was a fun,
just more challenging.
Well, thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for joining. You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You've been listening to another great edition of Open Air with Sherry Huber. Thank you, Sherry.
Okay.
See you next time.
Good night.
Good night.